This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
You're listening to the Deeply Graphic Design Cast, the show about all things design, from the creative side to the business side and all points in between. Follow the show on Twitter at Wes McDowell. Want the gang to answer your question on an upcoming episode? Send in your listener question to questions@thedeependdesign.com or via Twitter using hashtag DGDC. Here are your hosts.
Wes McDowell in Chicago.
Mikkel Morrison in Seattle.
Nick Longo in Los Angeles.
You had to think about that one, Mikkel. You're like, am I traveling this week? I don't remember.
I glitch.
Am I in Australia?
I you're just globetrotting.
Oh my gosh.
I still am jealous of you.
It's still so impressive that we were able to record together when I was over
there. I know.
That makes me happy.
I'm still jealous that you had like a fan sighting.
I wear my shirt like every day now, hoping that's going to happen.
Right?
Just don't wear your shirt without showering with a baseball cap holding several bottles of
vodka
in your hands.
You like that? That one beach boy who always wears the beach boy's hat. Like, it's kind of a party foul, but I'll allow it this once. If it can attract
It's totally like that.
That's great.
Yeah, so I would ask you guys what you're up to, but I think we have something more important to discuss this time.
Oh yeah, let's skip that for sure.
We have kind of an announcement, you guys, and it's kind of exciting. So Nick, why don't you do the honors and tell the people?
I will. Awesome. So happy to share this. Exciting news for all of us to share. The whole Deeply Graphic Design team is partnering with our friends at Adobe for the Adobe Max Creative Conference. It's coming up October 18th through the 20th in Las Vegas. I don't think we could be more happy. Yeah.
You need to say the location with a little bit more gusto. It's in
Las Vegas. Yeah. Because trust me, it was in San Diego last year and it was still amazing. So you can only imagine what they're going to do this year in Las Vegas. I can't even wait. Like, this is the coolest thing.
This isn't
thing,
in Denver or Des Moines. It's in Las freaking Vegas, baby.
So my
happy place.
If you're holding out for a particular trade show in our industry, this is not only the one, but now it's in Vegas. So it's like, you can't miss this. Again, it's October 18th through the 20th. Designers from like all over the world. Last year, I think the total amount was 10,000 people all in our industry show up. And they do this for a lot of reasons, but it's to rejuvenate their work, to rejuvenate their process, their creative journey, whatever it is, because we're all tied to this Adobe machine. Max is the perfect blend of like bringing inspiration, magic, practical knowledge, you name it, all together, because you get to see everything they're doing for the next year. And there's tons of great sessions to go to and explore. So not only will we be there to create like some live episodes and to do some interviews with some of the people speaking there, but Adobe has also arranged an amazing special discount for all of our listeners. So keep that in mind when you do register at max.adobe.com. You're going to use the code 17PDPC, and that will give you the discounted rate. Now, their prices go up as the months get closer to the actual conference, so the sooner you do, the better, just to get in there. But our discounted rate will be valid throughout the entire time of registration, which is great. So stay tuned for a lot more from us. We're going to be talking a little bit and brainstorming some ideas. But I think I speak for the three of us where we can't wait to meet you guys over at Adobe Max this summer.
Yeah. And so what the other thing that's cool about, you know, it's not just going there and seeing us. We're going to be doing a few live shows from there, kind of out in the open where you guys can interact with us. We are brainstorming, like Nick said, ideas of kind of what we want to do. You know, right now kind of thinking maybe kind of a live listener question thing. You are there in real time asking us questions. Getting your experiences at the conference, what you've learned, that kind of thing, as well as maybe interviewing some of the speakers there so we can kind of bring a piece of the conference to people that maybe weren't able to come. So
yeah,
just, there's a lot of cool things we can do. And we're also kicking around the idea of doing kind of a live meetup, just picking out a bar somewhere in Vegas. And
yeah, for sure.
You know, Hakkasan, something like that. Something low key like that.
Hakkasan.
Where a Kardashian spends their birthday
the
for $1,000. Yeah.
So we'll be on all of the news.
Yep.
Kicking off our little shindig there.
It'll be the three of us and Scott Disick and you all together. Because you know he's going to be there. So.
He's an Adobe Creative Cloud user.
Oh, gosh, I hope so.
Exactly, yeah.
But I'm so looking forward to it for so many reasons. But, like, last year was the first time I ever went, and I knew leaving that we had to not only be there this year, but to spread the word to our listeners a little bit more about the experience you get from these kind of things. And, you know, the best you could do to kind of get it in your budget, we totally understand that, you know, some of you, it is quite a, you know, an expense to get to these things. But hopefully with the discount and us being there and you name it, let's hope for the best. And hopefully a lot of you guys can make it there and we can meet up.
Yeah, it'll be fun. Last time the only time the three of us met up was at the HOW conference, and that was fun.
Mm-hmm.
This is poised to be even better. And when the three of us
Vegas,
get together,
baby.
Watch out. Fathers, lock up your daughters and sons, whatever. Nephews, nieces,
I think
whoever.
I'm going to put it out there. Let's get a group tattoo while we're there. Come
Ooh,
on.
The squid.
Look at.
There you go. Okay. All right.
Oh.
No, but more details to come.
Is that a threat?
Yeah. Anyone who doesn't show up has to bear the mark of the squid. That's my
there
decree. But yeah, we'll keep you guys updated with what we're planning in terms of our live show and all that stuff. So. And what Nick, yep. Throw that promo code out once more.
Sure. You're gonna go to max.adobe.com, and when you get into the registration, you're gonna enter 17PDPC. And I'm sure we'll put that on the notes so people can grab that from there as well.
Perfect. All right, cool. So on with the show. The business of this episode is all about advertising your design business. Should you, shouldn't you? You know. We're going to talk about some paid ways to actually advertise your business, which sounds scary to some people, but you know, advertising has been an institution since the dawn of time for a reason, because it works. And then Mikkel's got another, basically free way that you guys can use as well. Something that she has had great success with. So, you know, unless you have all the business you can handle already and you're happy with the money you're making, you should definitely consider advertising yourself. So I would say the first thing that you need to do, if you're going to be paying for advertising at all, if you're throwing money into this at all, you need to know your target buyer in a really detailed sense. You need to know what their job function is. Are they a small business owner? Are they a small business owner of a particular type of business? The more granular you can get with it, the more cost effective this is going to be, because the ways we're going to tell you about today, I love them. Some I love more than others. One I actually don't really recommend, but we're still going to talk about it just because it might be something you want. But
sure.
You know, these ways are all pretty cost effective based on these algorithms that the programs come with, and that you can target the right people. It's not putting up a billboard for $10,000 a month. It's these really laser focused, pinpointed ads that are just going to the right people versus to everyone. And you're paying for that. So,
I think that's a key point for the listeners to hear, is that if you're a little scared about that, you can really test the waters with these, with not a lot of investment, and pinpoint directly who you want. And I think that's something we got to take advantage of, especially if you're trying to drum up new business and not having a lot of success there. This is a great option to think about.
Yeah, absolutely. So without any further ado, let's talk about the first one. We're going to get this one out of the way because this is kind of my least favorite, but it has to be talked about. And that's Google AdWords. You know, I'll just tell right out of the gate, the reason I don't like it is I find it's a little expensive compared to these others. And it looks like an ad, and people know that it's an ad. Not that the other ways don't necessarily look like an ad, but think about whenever you are doing a Google search for something, you see those, you know, it can be one or four little ads at the top, most people are pretty trained to just bypass those. And go down to the organic results, which they deem to be more authentic. So, and that's going to be a little different than like when we talk about other forms later, because now they've typed in a search query and they've got all these options that are fulfilling that. So why are they going to choose an ad based on over something that's more quote authentic? So, but there are some upsides to AdWords as well. Particularly if you are a niche, let's say you design logos in the restaurant industry. That's your niche. That's what you do. That might be an easier thing to rank for than if you're just targeting the term logo designer. That's going to be expensive.
Yeah.
Forget web designer. That's like $40 a click or something.
Wow.
Oh yeah, they can go up there for sure. But you can also target people based on what they're searching for and a locality. So if you're more of a local design business, if you're just operating out of Wichita and you're like, want to say, go for like a Wichita graphic designer, that may be fairly cheap. I don't know. You'll be competing with Bill Gardner then probably. Gardner Designs, but and he's got the money to throw at it, baby. So I actually don't know if he uses AdWords or not. He probably doesn't have to. but AdWords can be good. You just have to do your research. And what I would say, you go to the Google Keyword Planner tool, just Google that. And then you can go in and see, you can type in your keywords and it'll give you their, other options, other varieties of those keywords. And you can really see what the estimated cost per click is. And if it's only you can decide what that's worth to you, So, but if it's over a certain dollar amount, I would say don't do it. And the other big thing that's kind of tangentially related to this conversation is I would not spend a dime advertising if your website isn't already really primed for conversions.
Sure.
I tell this to clients the time.
That's the whole point.
Yeah.
That's where you're leading them to.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a conversation for another time, and we have kind of covered it, but we may need a refresher at some point because things change all the time. But make sure your website is conversion optimized as it can be before you spend any money sending traffic there. But if you're confident in it, that the messaging is good and targeted and it's frictionless for them to contact you, then by all means, go for it.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
But AdWords, I've not really dove into too much. It just seems like kind of cost prohibitive to me, but
I think you nailed it by at the very beginning and saying we're so trained to kind of look beyond those because of them. Maybe it's the frequency. We see them more than anything else because we're not on one platform like Facebook or YouTube or LinkedIn. You're always on Google, I guess, in a way. So I think you're right. I think I'm so trained to look beyond them, and I don't know if that would really be the right fit. And I'm sure the other options we have might be a little more fine-tuned to who we are and who we're going after. So,
yeah,
I don't know. It just seems like unless you're selling something on Amazon, I don't get it.
Exactly. And, I'm so trained against it now, and I feel bad for ever clicking on an ad. So, like, if I search for, like, a specific brand, there will always be, like, the ad version. I'll never click on it because I'm like, I feel bad. I'm, like, costing you $50 probably to click this thing. So I'll always go down to the organic, but... because I was raised right, damn it.
Yep.
My mom taught me that at a very early age. Don't fall for the paid. Well, then they're always written so spammy too. I think that turns people off as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's obvious.
Always kind of a lot of
a lot of exclamation points and like new and too much.
Exactly. So the next thing I'll talk about, it kind of goes hand in hand. You actually start these ads from Google AdWords, and that's YouTube. So this I like a little bit better because it's a little more, it kind of sneaks under the radar a little bit more. It's not like here's an ad. So basically, YouTube is great if you want to kind of get your message in front of people within the YouTube environment. So what I would definitely recommend if you're going this route is don't think of it as an ad. Like do not make the ad, here's my company, here's what we can do for you. It should definitely be more educational and should serve, because think of when you're on YouTube and you get those ads, like the pre-roll ads that appear mm-hmm. before the video starts. How annoying is that? You know, you mm-hmm. can't wait to like click the little thing that says skip. Yeah. Skip this after 4 seconds. So, but if you make it really related to a specific search term that people, your target audience might be searching on within YouTube or Google, we'll get back to that in a second because that's kind of interesting. I just learned this. Mm-hmm. But if you type in, let's say, what do I need on a website in 2017? You know, like if people are searching for that and you want to appear for that search term, that's great. But now you better actually have that content in the video.
Yes. So, because a lot of times it's not there.
Right. Or it'll be something like, if you want to know those five things, then subscribe to my email list, which is just, no one, that's not going to buy you any goodwill. So make it really actionable content that fulfills that search query. And so the thing about YouTube ads, so there's a couple different kinds. So they are the pre-roll ads, you know, that go before a video. And then what I think is more valuable are the ones that appear, like, let's say you're watching one video, they'll appear on the right rail. Yeah. So, and it'll say advertisement, but if the title looks helpful and, you know, you might get a click there. So the thing to bring up about Google, which I just found this out and I found it very interesting. Let's say your client was typing into Google 5 minutes ago, web designers in Wichita. Now they're on YouTube. And they're just like, they keep the same browser session. They're in YouTube. It's their lunch break or whatever. They're looking up videos. Google owns YouTube. So YouTube knows what search terms people typed into Google in that same browser session. And they will show ads related to that within like around 10 to 15 minutes. Wow. Does that make sense?
Okay, gotcha. Yeah.
So they didn't even have to type that search term into YouTube, but that'll show up there.
The whole reason they bought them.
Right.
right there.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's a huge money-making scheme, that Google. I'm sure of it. But, so I thought that was super interesting that when you type in a search term into Google, it'll show up in YouTube later on. I think the one caveat is that, like I say, it has to be the same browser session. So if they were to close the browser, open up a new one, now that's all erased. So,
Yeah,
but, you know, if you do like a cool 1 to 3 minute video that's really actionable, and then at the very end, you can throw in some kind of a call to action. Like, hey, if you like this advice, you see what we can do for you, go here and then bring them to your landing page.
I find people are getting better and better at that pre-ad on the videos of YouTube. Mm-hmm. You know, the little thing you can skip. Yeah. And it's funny how even the bigger retailers and bigger companies are finding ways to kind of catch your attention. And I think they know they have a certain 3 to 4 second window to get you intrigued enough to watch it. But it's almost interesting to watch, and just on a sales perspective, see how people are putting together digital ads and how they're doing it well by looking at all these examples. You might not click on it, but it definitely is educational to look at these things and say, whoa, okay, everyone's changing. And they're trying to find new ways.
Yeah.
You know?
Well,
interesting.
And the other interesting thing about that, too, is like this can be really good just from a brand building perspective for just about anybody because whenever there's those pre-roll ads, there are several different kinds, right? There's the ones that must be played for the entire duration. And then there's ones that you can skip after 4 seconds. So if you can get, even if it's not like, quote, going to, you know, keep you watching for the entire video, if you can get your logo and like a quick brand message up there in those 4 seconds, that might be valuable on its own. If you can get in front of people several times that way, then you might stick out.
Yeah.
You know, but I like the right reel videos better. I think it's always better to not bombard people, have them do it on their own, you know?
Yeah.
So Nick, why don't you talk to us about yours?
Sure. LinkedIn has been kind of like a new one in this area. And I don't think a lot of people actually think of them as the typical spot to go to. But for business-to-business ads, if you think about it, that it makes a lot of sense in a ways. And when I was doing some research and thinking about doing some on my own, I've also just thought back at some of the response I've got by just being a blogger and a participant of LinkedIn has been much more focused because of the business community that's on there. So I just kind of figured, man, this would be the great one for some of us to try if we're thinking of that, because we're going after a particular business. But it's one of the best things to think about. So right now there's 400 million active users right now on LinkedIn. And that is a huge audience to pull from. But its huge advantage is that it's a platform on which four out of five members are people who are influenced in the business and the decision-making ability. So you've got an incredible group of people who not only do you want to target to, but can make a decision because they're in like a leadership position maybe at their company to say, yeah, I want to go with that, or I'm looking for someone of that caliber of that industry. Yeah. So keep that in mind, that the best thing about LinkedIn is these are decision-making people that you're reaching. It might not bring you as many leads. So think about it that way, that the quality of who you get is probably a bit more focused than any other platform. LinkedIn's targeting thing is pretty amazing. And I think a great way to look at it is it has all of the abilities that Google and Facebook and YouTube have, as far as you can pick the gender, the location, the income, all these different things. But what you can't do on the others, and you can do on LinkedIn, is you can target by occupation and by title. So you can go after like a specific person and company directly by the way you can set it up on LinkedIn. So I thought that was pretty amazing, that you can exclusively target these people at a particular company, a particular skill, or a particular industry. So keep in mind that that allows you a whole other option there, which is pretty cool. Some people have thought that the average cost per click on LinkedIn is a little bit high, and that it compared to other ones, it definitely is, I think. But you get again this more targeted audience. So if it's quality over quantity and you're paying a little bit more for it, it's worth a shot. Now, there is a minimum that you have to do, and that's $6 is a minimum daily budget for campaigns of $10. Okay. In contrast to Facebook, I think theirs is about 50 cents a daily minimum, little as $1. So yeah, it's a bit more of a premium for the price for clicks. But what you want to ensure is that these clicks that you have are the ones that you're going to want. And that makes it really, really strong. So like Wes said earlier, you want to make sure that you've refined all your strategy, and then anything you're leading them to has to really be carefully thought out to for that audience. So make sure you're at that, whatever that web link or that landing page is, that it truly is the answer to what you've just promised or what you've just put in that ad.
Yeah.
So keep that in mind with, if it is a little bit more of a for the budget, there is a reason for that. I think another one of its advantages, and this was new to me, and I like this part, being that I'm quite novice in doing this, but LinkedIn offers 9 different varieties of your ad, and that could differ in shape, positioning, and purpose. So the cool thing is you can make, for us specifically as designers, I think we want to have a little more of a custom touch to what these ads will be, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
and it gives the opportunity to kind of test.
I was really surprised about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's different creative for the different ads, or it's just different sizing?
It's different sizing, and it's different orientations and positioning. But one area though, where it is very customizable, if there's something that really rocks about your content, you really want to put it out there, you can write a small article on your LinkedIn blog, and that is where the ad could lead to. So you are keeping them in the same, system, and you're not going out too much. So it doesn't look like you're being sent to some website that's off of the platform here. So it could be the blog you posted in LinkedIn, or which I thought was really, really cool, is you can send them and share a SlideShare presentation that you have. You know how that, have any of you used SlideShare in LinkedIn? It's kind of like the Prezi. You can build a 20-page PDF on there, and you get to you design 100% those ads and those slides. So your SlideShare presentation could be linked to your ad. So now you get to run them through the sales pitch on your level and exactly how you want to do it, because you've shared something that's already on the LinkedIn site to your LinkedIn ad. So cool. It kind of allows you a little more customization there, and you can take them through a sales pitch, which is great. But although it's a pretty high price tag considering the other ones, no other social media platform offers this level of targeting, because you really can, zero in on that occupation and that title and someone specifically at a company you're going after. So it has some advantages, even though, the price point might be a little bit higher than what you're seeing.
Sure. Now, are these mostly, here's the thing about LinkedIn, I'm on there a few times a week, whatever, but I don't think I've mm-hmm. really noticed ads. Are they fewer and far?
It's not blatant like it is on Facebook okay. and the other interfaces. It's differently, it's organized visually in a different.
Okay. So are they more like kind of sponsored blog posts, more or less, or are they do they look like ads when they're done?
Both ways. Okay. So you can actually, I think the key is to make it more of a post and it shows up in someone's feed.
Oh yeah, I would always recommend that.
That obviously feels a little bit better. Over to the right mm-hmm. is usually a pretty predominant ad that is of usually bigger companies mm-hmm. that have kind of the upper right-hand corner when you're on your feed. So what you really want to look for is something that gets you into the feeds, into groups, into mm-hmm. the organizations that LinkedIn has. So, I almost feel like this one's ever changing in a way. So there's ways to look at it to get in there now and see and play around and see if test the waters. But I really have this feeling that more and more people I'm hearing about is the business to business world. LinkedIn is your solution, really, because again, you get the right person, you're under that umbrella that they kind of trust a little bit because of it being LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. And I hope primarily this kind of weeds out a lot of the Facebook-ish that we see on LinkedIn. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think it's slowly, they had to understand that it was becoming this Facebook style feed and people were just losing interest in it. And I'm seeing them make a big effort to kind of bring the business person back. And that could be with Microsoft buying it and putting in a lot of new things, understanding how important it is for us to have something as strong as LinkedIn, So definitely look at it. I would love to try it because, again, like I said, I think of any platform, and without even trying, I've gotten 2 to 3 clients based off of things they saw on LinkedIn.
That's great.
That's so cool, really.
Yeah, yeah. So I can imagine advertising sounds like a safer bet for me there.
Yeah, for sure. And I would say this goes for any kind of whenever you're doing any kind of advertising that's not like where they are typing something in and you're finding your result. If it's kind of more of disrupting their day, like in a LinkedIn ad or Facebook, which we'll talk about soon, the better bet is never to, like I said, here's our company, here's what we can do. It should always be something that's kind of helpful, and putting your face in front of theirs first.
Yes.
You need to because what you're doing then is you're essentially in front of a cold audience, right? So you need to warm them up over several interactions. So it's always better to do that. And then you can retarget people that have looked at that ad to get the next ad that might be a little more blatant, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
All right, cool. So the next one I'm going to talk about is Facebook. So we've talked about Facebook ads before. I love Facebook ads. So Nick, you said that LinkedIn is the most targeted, which is great. The only thing you said that I think Facebook doesn't do is like going after a certain person at a certain company. But other than that, you can target you can target job titles, occupations, all that good stuff. Ages, locations, interests, income levels, all these things, which make it just so it's just so cost effective when you can pinpoint it that way. And if you
and wouldn't you say Facebook has probably the most data as far as years go because of how much we were? I mean, 10 years ago, people were just like,
well, Google has more,
but they do, I guess. But specifically, we've told Facebook what we like, what our interests are, what our hobbies are, and it's real. So I don't know. That's what my thought maybe.
Yeah.
You know?
No, you're pretty definitely strong. Right about that. Because Google, all Google's really got is. You know, your search history, behavior, but they don't really know. You haven't told Google, this is what I do for a living. This is, you know, all this kind of, they can just kind of extrapolate based on what you've looked at. But Facebook is amazing. And again, I'll reiterate again. So if you're going to do Facebook ads, when you're going from a cold audience, which is, you know, if you're coming up with an audience of people based on their demographics, they may not have heard of you. So to go in for a sale right away is premature, and you're not going to do very well, and you're going to pay for that. Because what Google, I mean, what Facebook wants is to, they come up with a relevancy score, they call it, for an ad. So let's say you make an ad and you serve it up to your demographic, and you're just asking too much in this ad. Like you're saying, hey, hire me to do your website today. It's not going to go over very well. And therefore, Facebook is going to assign that ad a low relevancy score because people aren't interacting with it. So what happens, the lower your relevancy score is, the more you pay when that ad is shown. So what you want to do is you want to go in and just provide some value. Do a video blog, do like a sponsored post that goes to a blog post of yours or something, where it's, what you're doing is you're kind of self-selecting this group that might be interested in this content. And then you can retarget once they've consumed that content to see maybe one more like that. And then now finally your ad, as you know it as an ad, you know? So by the time they get to that ad, they're warmed up to you and your brand a little bit more. The relevancy score will be higher because they know you. And now you'll pay less per click the whole way through.
Perfect.
Yeah. Then that really accomplishes a couple of goals. It lowers your cost and it allows people to get to know you, which it takes that. You know, that's, you're never going to get someone right away when they're not really looking for it. It's one thing if people are doing a Google search on a web designer in Wichita. Now they're looking for you. That's like, I would consider that a warm lead kind of already. But if they're just, you know, they're just the, you know, the small business owner going through their Facebook feed, maybe the better bet is not to say, hey, hire me for a website. Give them, put the seed in their head, hey, maybe you need a new website and here's why.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Would you say it'd be smarter to advertise a more broad spectrum than a targeted thing because you're not getting a person that's primarily really looking for that?
That's an interesting point.
What do you think?
I think you still need to target to your demographic, to your persona that you've defined.
But that's all in the back. That's all in the background, right? That's what you click and choose.
Yeah, you choose all that stuff. So then you're the first ad, which is like, let's not even call it an ad. Let's just call it a sponsored post, like something that's helpful. Let's call it that for
now.
That
sounds better.
So you're still not going to want to scattershot that out to everybody because what's the point of that? You want to go after your niche market. And not everyone's going to bite, but the ones that do, now these are people that are actually interested. Let's say you've got a Facebook tracking pixel on that page of your website, of that blog. They go there, they read the blog, Facebook knows they did. Now they get ad number two.
Okay.
Or sponsored post number two.
Nice.
Then if they read that, now we know they've gone from a cold lead to a warm lead to a pretty hot lead, you know, with a few pieces of content, and now you can hit them up with the offer.
Okay.
You know,
got it. That sounds great. So it's a little bit of a consecutive,
It's kind of a cascading effect, but,
good. Okay.
And it sounds complicated, but really it makes a whole lot of sense. And it's, we've had pretty good success with it for clients. So
good.
Yeah.
Good.
That's cool.
I'd be curious too, to ask any listener who's wanting to try this out a little bit, to let us, you know, do it and build a little case study. See, I'd love to see how it helps a lot of people, because I think it's the next logical step. If anyone's truly trying to say, I'm just not getting enough business, let me give this a shot.
Yeah.
It's such a familiar environment for most of us. Why not try it there and see what happens?
Exactly. And you just,
we'd love to hear.
Yeah. And you just have to be in the mindset of someone who's on Facebook. They're not there looking for what you've got, but you can sneak in that back door and really kind of get in their head a little bit. And then all of a sudden, now they're more receptive, you know? So you don't want to bang them over the head right
without
away.
Without it being shoved down their throats.
Yeah. You know, as long as you're giving them something that they want to see and that will help them, then you look like the expert and when it comes time, mm-hmm. and they're going to remember you over somebody else. So, all right, cool. So I've got one more, but Mikkel, why don't you break it up with your method?
So I took a little bit of it. I'm taking a little bit of a different direction of it. I guess it's more of an angle with this in terms of advertising, because I personally, for my business, don't have experience with paid ads. So I think first it would help to bring up a really recent exchange that I had with one of our listeners, actually. He had gotten in touch with me last weekend to inquire how I have landed both larger accounts and smaller accounts. And by that, he meant just a nice balance between nonprofits as startups and then doing support for, you know, the more of the top guns around the Pacific Northwest, so to speak. So, and honestly, it took no time to kind of share why I think that that's been the case. And it's because I've had in-house agency experience, and my means for payment has been making sure that I take time out of my schedule to regularly connect with my people, whether they were coworkers from a former agency or people that I've had design support experience with. So I don't close an account, send invoice, and think, done deal.
Yeah.
I constantly am checking in with these people. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, sometimes it's business related. Other times they've shared with me things in their personal life, and I've just kind of knocked on their door once again just to check in and see, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe have you had the chance to revisit your budget? I know last time we spoke that you had mentioned that it would be ideal to bang out the following marketing materials. Have you put some more thought into that? So, and then another interesting component to all of this, of course, with respect to referrals is, so Jason, he manages a number of sales representatives for his company. And what makes them successful is not necessarily shooting out to the random public. It's maintaining relationships that they've made sales with, because those are the people that have had awesome experiences and are going to make referrals to their friends, their family, coworkers, and so on about not only a great experience with Jason's company, but I know you're probably thinking about it. Let me give you so-and-so's contact details. So it's maintaining relationships that you've already had successful experiences with. And then not only that, this another example that might help depict what I'm trying to explain here is I had a phone call with a potential. I guess it was my chance to kind of pitch, to be honest, over the phone. And I actually forgot to ask her how she found me. I saw that she sent me in an email, info@mkmdesign.com, which is available on my website. And I just figured that's maybe how she found me. This is completely out of the ordinary for me. But because I forgot, part of my pitch was talking with her about these other accounts that I've rebranded that are in the area. Well, brokerage is the industry. Everybody knows everybody.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So all I had to do was say the last names of some people that I'm going to be undergoing brand identity design for, that's going to be featured on my HD TV. They've just gotten way too big. They don't know what to do with it. So it's kind of a cool account that I've landed. And she's like, oh, you know them? And then right then, I got a fish hook. Right? She knows that if I've already supported these people that she has the utmost respect for that are in the same industry. I guess it could go either way. Maybe it's conflict of interest. And she's like, oh, shit, we need to hang up.
Yeah.
I can't hire this girl. Or she's taking into account, if she's undergone brand identity for this account and the other that I am in touch with on a regular basis, and I've seen the work, that's the means of portfolio share for her.
Social proof. In action.
Social proof in a way. Yeah, exactly. That's a cleaner way of describing what I was getting to. So that's how I landed the account. And that was all by verbal exchange, mm-hmm. but it is under the umbrella of referral business in my mind.
Yeah. So you get pretty much all of your new clients through word of mouth and referrals, correct? Mikkel?
With the exception of maybe a few, I think that overall for me and my business is correct. Okay. Yes.
I'm right there with you with that. And I think that's what I strive for more than anything is like that to me is a real natural way. If it ever came that I would need to reach out, I know the tools, but I think organically mine's happened a lot along the same lines of what you just described.
And there's something that's refreshing about this that isn't going all completely digital, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah,
that is scary to me. Wes, everybody is aware of this. It's no secret. Wes is comfortable in this arena.
Mm-hmm.
He's been practicing it for a long time. When he moved to Chicago, he reworked it for himself in a different, I mean, you have been putting this to play for yourself, for your business for a while now. It's comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I find discouragement that you submit a job application for something that is right up your alley and you won't get a phone call because you're a needle in a haystack and maybe you'll get lucky. You don't hear about cold calling anymore. You don't care about people picking up the phone and following up and saying, hey, I'm just hoping to have my name at the ready on your desk. I'm not sure if you had a look at my resume yet. Remember Christie's story where she showed up?
Yeah.
Was it a brewery or restaurant? That was such a cool story. I think it was just
some kind of random office setting. But yeah, she came with a cake with her resume on
it. Okay. Cake. Yeah.
So smart.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Oh, my God.
And who else is doing that? Come on. That's like...
I mean, and she didn't end up getting the job, but she definitely got an interview based on that. And I think for whatever reason, maybe it wasn't the right fit, but she probably wouldn't have even got the interview because you know how it is when you get people sending you resumes. It's like there's too many to go through. And you just get.
I hope it wasn't like Weight Watchers or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, know your audience. You still got to know your audience.
Yeah, exactly.
I sometimes get concerned about the lack of experience. You and me, Nick, we're not putting this to practice the way that Wes is mm-hmm. on a regular basis. So I sometimes get concerned that I'm not enough. And so I'll force myself to, when I get pinged from LinkedIn ProFinder to submit a proposal. For example, I'll be active for depending on my schedule. And I don't have people saying, oh, she did great work. The MKM Design did great work for us when we did such and such. That's not working the angle there for me with LinkedIn ProFinder. It's just one submittal out of five because
mm-hmm.
LinkedIn cuts it off after five so to keep these requests for proposals at a minimum and less overwhelming, of course, which is nothing other than smart. But I don't get follow-ups necessarily.
Yeah, I haven't used it yet. I get the me pings either. And everything, but like, gosh, to me too, and we've talked about this before too, I want less and more quality clients. So to me, I'm so fearful of shooting for it in the advertising world in a way because of just what's happening organically and with referrals. But I don't want to discredit what this could do for a lot of our listeners too.
Yeah. Well, absolutely.
You know what I mean? Because it's really the most of our questions are in that zone of how to get more, how to get better, you know? So
and this also supports the thought and just the well-known fact that the world, each metropolitan area is super, super small.
Mm-hmm.
People know people. Don't burn bridges, maintain relationships. You just never know. With this Brent Haven account that we're supporting once again, I was out of touch with them for a good 5 years. And then what do you know?
Mm-hmm.
I'm supporting them again. You just never know.
Yeah. So it's almost a layer to keep in mind and atop of everything else that you have to do.
I think so.
Reputation and referrals
yes.
have to be happening all the time, regardless
of
what else you're
doing. It is a means for advertisement. Mm-hmm. It is a means for advertisement.
Oh, yep. By far. Because when it comes from a trusted person, it's the same way an ad in a trusted environment makes someone feel more comfortable, right?
Right. And or a recommendation on LinkedIn or a...
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Totally. All good points. Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. All right, cool. So the last one I want to talk about, it's a little kind of a little different, but very apropos for the show. So, cool. And that's the idea of.
Yeah. Well, I took a different angle. Yeah. You go okay. for it.
Well, this one, it's the idea of advertising on a podcast. So there's a million podcasts out there. Cool. I'm not even kidding. There's probably more than a million podcasts out there, and they each have a niche of their audience. So this is why if you can find the right podcast that has sponsorships on it, that your audience is listening to, that could be a great way of doing it. And it's generally a pretty low cost, pretty low barrier to entry to advertise on a podcast, particularly one that's not like, I mean, if you're trying to get on like, you know, NPR or like, you know, S-Town or something, good luck. But there's so many smaller ones. And think about it, like a podcast is great because when you start listening to it, you get to know the hosts and you kind of trust what they say about certain things. So if you can find that right host that can deliver your message, maybe even do an episode where you're on as the guest talking about what, you know, talking about a certain topic and keeping it super, you know, non-promotional at first, but building to that, that can really go a long way. You know?
Yeah, cool. Definitely. That's a good one.
And it's like, I think you've mentioned in the past too, like just being a guest blogger or anything like that. The podcast is a whole other kind of level to kind of shoot for because you're right. Yeah. I think there's a sense of familiarity or if you might listen to one and people, I think smaller, younger ones might be very eager to say, yeah, that's that kind of, you're a guest and we're promoting something. There's a cool little combination there. If it's the right fit, I dig that.
Absolutely. So like, for instance, like we talk about FreshBooks on this show and whenever I talk to them and it's time, like, do you want to re-up or not? They're always like, yes, because we get a great response from your show. Like people trust you and they come through.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it is. But I mean, I'm not saying that to pat us on the back. I'm just kind of trying to illustrate that it can work if you get the right fit and you get the right hosts that are going to, you know, talk about it in the right way. So what I would say is do your research, figure out who your audience is and figure out what kind of podcast might they be listening to. Would it be like a marketing podcast? Would it be, there's gotta be a ton of podcasts out there geared toward small business owners. There's gotta be a ton of those. So just find one that's got enough listenership and, won't charge you too much more than you're willing to pay. And just see what they can do for you. I've not actually advertised on a podcast myself, so I can't really tell you what's. Well, actually, I did. I did look into this once, kind of recently, and the price point was mind boggling. So, but it was like a really highly rated show. I think so. I think they wanted like $11,000.
Good to know, though.
They wanted like $11,000 for a few months or something. Yeah,
really?
Too rich for my blood, but I'm sure someone will pay it.
Wow.
Yeah. So anyway, I hope we've given you guys some good ideas for advertising. There's a million different options out there. And I think the main takeaway here is know what place people might be in the sales funnel and don't try to, you know, jump the gun too quickly. It'll turn people off. So get them at the right stage, hit them with helpful information at the right time, then hit them with, you know, information that kind of opens their eyes up to what you do and what they might need, and then hit them up with the sale. So, but we've got a listener question coming up, but first, speaking of FreshBooks, I know you guys were waiting for me to segue to them the last time, but we didn't, I wasn't going to do that. Okay, so FreshBooks, we love. They, you know, just make it really ridiculously easy to use. A cloud accounting software. Agencies and freelancers alike can use it to work smarter, get organized, and most importantly, get you paid quickly. You know, with literally two clicks, you can set yourself up with FreshBooks online payments and end up with money in your pocket much sooner. You know, and like we say, with FreshBooks payments, over 60% of invoices get paid within one day, which is pretty great. That's definitely not the case with other methods. So I can speak to that. And you can send and create really professional looking invoices in under 30 seconds with your own branding. You just upload your logo and it kind of takes the colors out of it and uses that to brand your invoice and just make it look really professional. So it's not like, it's definitely a step up from, you know, emailing a PDF or whatever. And you can know when they viewed it. You can know when they've paid it. You can send out the automated reminders, which is awesome. I love that. It's like if they're one of the ones that didn't pay within one day, then you can just click a button saying, how about nudge this guy? We're still waiting over here. So
you just reminded me of one I got to do today.
Oh, yeah. Someone needs a nudge from Nick.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So
from FreshBooks, I should say.
Yeah, they've got a great mobile app where you can take pictures of receipts on your phone, and then you can store those when it comes for tax time, which makes it like a million times easier for that. And support, they've got amazing support, which for me, that's something I always look for in just about any kind of service like this. So any questions whatsoever, their award-winning customer service team is really helpful and friendly, no attitude, and a real live person.
No, they're great.
Answer in three rings or less.
No attitude. Can you imagine?
Ugh. Well, they're Canadian. Like we always say, that's just that. Wait. Canadians are just the nicest. So, yeah. And we've worked out with them a 30-day unrestricted free trial. Just go to freshbooks.com/deeplygraphic and enter deeply graphic design in the how did you hear about us section. So again, 30-day unrestricted free trial. Go to freshbooks.com/deeplygraphic and enter deeply graphic design in the how did you hear about us section. All right. So we have an audio question today from one Mr. Ryan Wheaton. And Wheatons. But Nick, you were... We're just kidding, Ryan. But Nick, you were actually a guest on his podcast, correct?
Correct. Two episodes now.
Wow.
I know.
Cool.
I can't stop talking about beer.
Yeah, the cheating.
I can't stop talking about beer.
All right, cool. So let's go ahead and roll that clip.
Hi, guys. This is Ryan Wheaton, graphic designer and host of Branding Brews, a podcast about beer branding and design. Been a great fan of your show, and I appreciate all the great insights you guys provide. I know you've covered case studies in the past, and I think case studies are really important to sell the value and quality of the work that you can provide for a client. Having specific data and metrics can really help with these case studies. So for example, like redesigning a website landing page might have increased conversions by, say, like 180%, or like a packaging redesign might have increased sales by like 160%. So like these are really great statistics that you can, you know, you can prove your value and the value of your work you provide for a client. I think selling these values as a benefit to a client can be much better than just trying to sell your design work or your design skills. In my past experience, many of my clients I've had do not have a high priority in keeping track of these kind of statistics. Sometimes they're just too busy, or maybe they don't have a designated marketing person that really values or might even be interested in tracking this kind of information. So I'd be curious to see if you have any tips or, you know, any easy ways to like get your clients to start tracking this kind of data. That way you might be able to start, you know, seeing some of the benefits of your work and then also be able to have some great content to show in your design case studies. Keep up all the great work on the show. I definitely appreciate it. Cheers.
Okay, Ryan, thank you for the question. That's actually a great one. I'm a big believer in case studies. I love to do video case studies and all that. So you're basically saying that you want to put all this great data into your case studies, but your clients may not be so interested in either looking into it or providing it to you. So I can tell you, if we're talking about a website, which case studies are perfect for, because there is so much data like that you can mine from, the easiest thing ever is to just keep access to the website.
Yeah.
Keep access to their analytics. I mean, especially works if you have some kind of ongoing relationship with them. Like if you're building some kind of recurring revenue, if you're doing ongoing SEO for them, anything like that, then there's always a reason for you to have that access. I keep it anyway, just in case, because they'll invariably always come back to you with some kind of a fix or an update. So it's better just to keep that. So you can always go in. And what I like to do is just put that Google Analytics widget into the WordPress dashboard. So you can go in there and just see what's happening. And I don't look at this as spying of any kind. This is kind of doing your due diligence, like going in and making sure what you've done is performing. So that's the easiest way, is just keep the access. And most, I've never really had a client who's taken that access away either. So unless they're cagey about something, or if you have, specifically technical kind of client who really doesn't want you to have access, then it's easy to do on your own. And it's so much more efficient than having to fish around and ask. Because, people get busy and,
Yeah, and I think on my side, too, I have to do the kind of the fishing around and asking, because there might not be the website data to support how our designs have helped the client in a way. And two things I did that I thought might help Ryan out in this question. First thing I did was I worked with one, a restaurant that we had designed was all said and done. About 6 months later, we went in, and I did want those things for my case studies to say a little bit about it. And we went in and spent a day. I charged like a day rate because I wanted the client to know how good things were going and what people thought. And I just observed for a few hours at the spot, asked people what they thought, what was their vibe, did they enjoy this, did the environment make a decision on, help you make a decision on choosing this place and things like that. And we got great detail. So I didn't want to just do it for free, but I wanted to offer it to them in a way and charge a little for it.
Yeah.
And then it worked out good, because now I have good stuff to really talk that I feel is more heartfelt than it is numbers. So to me, I felt like that was maybe a better way to go at it. And then the second that I did for one consumer goods product that is a client of ours is I just kind of filtered through their Instagram and their Facebook and collected really good positive stuff that people either said about it, how they use the product, do they use it in different recipes, are they getting creative with it? And that was a very unique way to not only collect what I feel, again, is more heartfelt or more like user experience stuff.
Yeah.
And when I used it for a new client that had a very similar product, they were like, wow, your designs brought an excitement to the consumer and to the customer. And I had a really good way of talking about it. So I guess in some ways you got to be different based on what you're going after. And I didn't want just increase sales, blah, blah, blah. I wanted something a little more specific to the experience and people.
Yeah, no.
Because and then this is the stuff you can use in discovery for when you do land that next one based on case study stuff that you've used. You could achieve, you want, that's the thing you're going to shoot for. That's like the expectation.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that because it gives me a little bit more to design for, because now I know what to shoot for and go, I want the consumer to feel that same way. How do I do it with a new client?
Yeah.
So
no, it's a great,
that's what I've done.
It's a great tactic, because there are going to be times when, even with websites, where maybe you want to show a great case study, but maybe it didn't maybe the numbers aren't exactly that impressive, but what you can do is something like that. Do kind of a softer point. Case study where it's more emotion based. Because sometimes, sometimes people think more with their emotions than they do logically. So if you can have this put together some kind of a user focus group and just get people's reactions to the before and after, that could kind of almost take the place of hard data. And for certain buyers, that won't sway everybody. But for the right person, that might be very convincing. So
I would bet too that there's less of a percentage of success stories that have those numbers that are worth bragging about nowadays. Like, you know what I mean? It's many businesses.
For sure.
And someone might be doing great, but you're right. Those numbers might not just be that impressive.
Yeah.
So find a way to talk a little bit.
It's hard
bit
to
more,
say like we increase something by 10% and being like knocking in someone's socks off with that. I mean, even though that's a lot,
exactly.
It doesn't sound like a lot to the ever. Like if you can say 300%, that sounds amazing. But truth is, that's not always going to be the case. So
yeah.
Yeah.
And it was only $2.99 maybe.
Yeah. And there's actually there's a website called usertesting.com that will do videos of people. Like, you pay, I think it's like $50 for a video, but they'll find a real person to go to a website and like perform whatever specified task. So if you could get a few of those, if you designed a website for someone, you could get them to go pay a little bit, invest in the case study, invest in your business, and have them go to the existing website and tell them what to do and say, and just get that video of them having a hard time with it, and then have them go to the new one and then have a much easier time and show the two videos back to back. That could be kind of compelling. Or just have,
that's cool.
Yeah, or save money and just have someone else do it, you know? Put together a little group of friends or whoever. So, all right.
Make it a party.
Exactly.
I like that.
All right, cool, Ryan. Thanks for sending that in. And we love getting those audio questions. So send those in to questions@thedeependdesign.com. And I want to remind you guys again about the Adobe Live. What are the dates on that again, Nick?
October 18th through the 20th.
Yeah, they are. Come hang out with us, drink with us, you know, do whatever it is people do in Vegas that they're not allowed to talk about, but do it with us.
Because he'll stay there.
Exactly. All right. Well, with that in mind, keep designing and catch us next time on the Deeply Graphic Design Cast.